That's like Mount Sinai stuff. Ooh. Of course, you know, when Jesus comes back, there's going to be a big shofar blast first. I hope that was it. I hope it's tonight. That'd be so awesome. So session 31. So we only got two more sessions after this. Some of you came to the Native Tool album. And some of them twice. These guys and those guys have been through it twice. You've been through it about 8 times.
I lost count after a while.
Yeah. It's like one of the women who comes to One in Messiah said, would you, this is like last fall. She goes, would you be interested in starting a Torah study? That I want to do the Torah study at my house and I'll invite some people. And I said, maybe after New Year's. I need a little break from it too. Let's do another book. Oh, it was great. Father Ed wants me to get him over here too. Yeah, it was a great presentation. It was good. So I already told the guy, I said, there may be, we didn't get a lot of people here, because, he lives on collections. I said, you probably get a good offering if you come here and juice it up, do a good job. Yes. Yeah, he has that too in his thing. Yeah, some of the pollen around the head comes from the plant that makes the thorns, and it only comes out in April. Yeah, there's a flower similar thing. Yes. It comes out just in the spring, yeah. A lot of amazing stuff. I mean, the blood and it's amazing stuff. And it's not actually a crown of thorns; it's a helmet of thorns. There's thorns all around. It's pretty interesting. And then it was April, it was Passover, and Daniel prophesied when the Messiah is going to come into the city. And it comes out to be, I forgot, April 20-something of what we call the year 32. But it's pretty close. I mean, it might have been right. We don't know exactly anymore. He wasn't, born, and then they said, okay, now this is year one. Some latitude there. Anyway, so Deuteronomy. So now, there's a lot of stuff in this lesson, and again, we're not reading every single thing. And again, I have to emphasize, don't tell your Jewish friends how we're doing this, because it would be embarrassing. Embarrassing. Because what they would do in, 2 years, we're going to do in one night. So what we'll do is, some of this we're going to read, some of it we're going to just kind of summarize. So we're down to chapter 14. So there's been a lot of stuff about no idolatry and no making things and no associating with the people you're going to come in contact with. So this starts to go on in chapter 14. Let's see. Somebody start reading at 14:1. Now remember, Deuteronomy is Moses talking, not God talking. That's the difference of the other four books where God's narrating the books. Here, Moses is narrating the book. And you can see as this goes on in history, people get further and further from God. So instead of God doing the talking, some person does the talking until the cross, then everything changes. So somebody start reading verse 1.
You are children of the Lord your God. You shall not graft yourself and stay the hair above your forehead or your dead. For you are a people sacred to the Lord your God, who has chosen you from all the nations on the face of the earth to be a people that fears peculiarly your God.
Okay, stop there. So again, there's a covenant people. You're the only covenant people. So you're separate from everybody. We now have decided we want to be like the world. So the barbarians are coming over the wall. You know, and there's churches, you know, oh, well, we don't talk about sin here. That makes people feel bad. You know, we kind of have to get with the times here. You know, we're supposed to be a special people because we as believers in the Messiah, we're a special people set apart from everybody else. We're not supposed to be like everybody else. In fact, that's why Jesus washes the apostles' feet. And he says, you know, you're clean, but your feet get dirty walking around in the world. You got to keep your feet clean all the time or else the dirt influences you. And as time's gone on, and most of us are old enough to know how things have changed. You don't know that, but you have insight into it. I mean, you know, the watchmen on the walls, you know, God always put watchmen on the walls. Ezekiel was a watchman. Isaiah was a watchman. There's always watchmen on the wall, looking, watching for the enemy, watching for, giving warnings. Now the watchmen are asleep and the barbarians are coming over. And the walls are crumbling. Because now the gospel's been hijacked into everybody's supposed to be nice. Supposed to help people, you're not supposed to criticize anybody, you're supposed to be tolerant. That's not the gospel. And so things are starting to weaken. So here, these people are a special covenant people. Nobody else in the world is in the covenant. Right? Just the Israelites are in the covenant. So they're a special possession that belong to him. So you don't do things that the others do. You don't cut yourself. You don't tattoo yourself. You don't pierce yourself. You don't do pagan things. Those are pagan things. And, well, ears, I think, were okay. So, you know, you don't behave like the pagans because they do things that are hopeless because they don't have a God that's their own. They don't have a king like you guys do. Remember when we studied Numbers in the Balaam was supposed to curse the people. He said, they have a king with them. You know, we have a king. We have the king with us. But we pretty much said, oh, well, what can you do? Maybe we can do whatever we want. Who's to say what's right and wrong? You know, we were growing up, everybody knew what was right and wrong. Now, nobody knows. Who knows what's right and wrong? You know? You got away from the faith. Easy. Easy. You get away. So the farther you move from the cross, the more stuff happens. And the gospel's been hijacked. It's social justice now is all the gospel is. Or you really have social justice. You can have real nice Buddhists. You can have real nice atheists to help people. But that's not the gospel. The gospel is Jesus and what he did on the cross. You're supposed to help people. But that's not the gospel. You help people because you know Jesus. Not because that's going to get your points with them. But that's another thing. So you're not worthy to do, you know, those, you don't, you're more worthy than those people are. Remember, we've had examples where he said, you know, kill everybody that you come in contact with. When you go into that town, kill everybody. Because they don't want you to get contaminated. And that's not to say we're supposed to kill sinners. But it's kind of a scary metaphor that God would rather have them murder the pagans than be contaminated by them. Now, we're not under that. So, don't go out and start killing non-believers. That's not good. Plus, you'll get arrested. And go to the penitentiary. So, So the stuff that these guys do is not worthy of you. Now, you know, you go to schools, kids are cutting themselves. Everybody's got tattoos. Everybody's got piercings. He says, don't do that. Those are the things the pagans do. Now, your body's a temple of the Holy Spirit. And of course, it'd be basic. What he talks about. You know, my translation says, don't make any baldness on your foreheads. I didn't do it though. I didn't purposely do it. Hope I don't have to answer for being bald. Yeah. So then, starting in verse 3, some of the dietary laws restated. Now, we've been through all that, but I think it's good to read it again. So somebody start reading in 3. Pig is the worst. You know, you can eat an animal that has a cloven hoof, a split hoof, and chews a cud. The pig has a split hoof. It doesn't chew a cud. But for some reason, the pig is more detestable than the others. You're not even allowed to touch it. Like, you can't eat a horse because it's got a solid hoof. But you can ride on a horse. A pig you can't even touch. Now, saying that, you ever notice some of the stories Jesus tells? He always includes that. Because that's the zinger to the religious leaders. Yes, the pigs went over the cliff. But, you know, he commonly talks about pigs in front of the religious leaders. They can just picture them going, eh, like the prodigal sons he did. This kid got to such a low level that he was working with pigs. You're not allowed to touch pigs. So he made, you know, that kind of speech got their attention because it's like, ooh. I don't even know what comparison we would have that with. So that's the basic of the animal thing. Okay, now read. Oh, yeah. Acts 10, Peter has a vision of all the unclean animals. Hears a voice, take and eat. And Peter says, I'm not eating that stuff. Oh. God says, don't call unclean what I've made clean. Because it doesn't, the dietary law can't apply. Jesus fulfilled all the law. Now, if a Christian doesn't want to eat pork, I don't care. If an old Jewish guy becomes a believer and says, hey, I never ate pork, I don't want to eat pork now, I don't care. But if you say, oh, you know, as a Christian, you're not allowed to eat pork, then that would be silly. It's kind of like our, where you guys met my friend Sharif, the Egyptian guy. I tell you what, when those guys fast, all of Lent, he's eating bread, he's got a salad this big and a carrot. And I say, you know, oh, I'm fasting today, I'm having a fish sandwich and fries and all this other stuff. And he goes, you call that fasting? He goes, I'm having a carrot. These guys, they're in Good Friday, they're in church from 9 a.m. to 6:30. Then they take a break. Then they go back from 9 p.m. to 5 in the morning. We went for like an hour and a half of it. They were there all that time. Parking lot was packed. Yeah. We couldn't even sit in the church. We had to sit in a side chapel and watch the service on TV. place is packed. It's amazing. You know, here, if we were here like an hour and 10 minutes, people would start getting tremors. They'd be reaching for the Valium, and who knows? Okay, let's finish this dietary thing. Start reading at 9. So no shrimp, no scallops, no lobsters, no crabs. Right. Only fish with scales and fins. Go ahead. So you don't eat these things because I told you not to eat them, and in order to be holy, you can't eat those. So those are all part of the Shekinah and 13 laws. So if you decide, oh, what the heck, I'm going to have an osprey for dinner, I don't even know what that is, then you violated the law. Or a kite. You can eat an ibex. Whatever that is. You can use their horns for show cards, too. Those are the really curly ones. They make the coolest show cards. Those ones that sell for like hundreds of dollars from an IDEX. So that's kind of a restatement of the dietary laws. And then the chapter goes on. I just wanted you to get like a feel for that, especially if you haven't been through it before. But then it talks about the tithes. You know, a tithe is, that's an old English word for what? A tenth. So a tenth of everything you have has to go to the Lord. It's not just your money. It's what comes out of your field. It's if somebody gives you something. So, you know, if your field produces 100 bushels of wheat, you have to give 10 bushels to the priest. Yeah, yeah. You can't cook a baby goat in milk. Yeah. I don't know why you would do that in the first place. So don't do that. It's one of the 613 laws. So if you ever do that, you're banned. I don't think that applies to us. I've never heard anybody doing that. Oh, that's okay. The thing is no longer about donuts. I'd violate every one of them. Or coffee. So the tithe has to be taken to the Lord's house. And let me tell you, when people complain about, oh, all those Catholic priests who want money, they have no idea. Every other church, you got to bring your W-2. And you got to give a tenth of the gross, not the net. You don't do it. It's before taxes, not after. So priests never talk about money. Can you imagine if Catholics tithe, how much money there would be? Even if you did a half tithe, it was 5%, how much money there would be. They wouldn't know what to do with it all. But this was a command. You have to give 10%. Now, that's technically not an effect anymore. But they had to do it. Because that's how, remember, the Levites don't get land. The Levites aren't allowed to work. So that's how they support it. People bring food, people bring money. But no ospreys. What's that? The Levites didn't feed. Okay. Oh, yeah, okay. they're not, so Jesus couldn't have been a priest. So, this is why, too, Jesus uses that in a teaching. He gets mad at this Pharisee and says, you know, you guys make sure you tie every single particle of stuff, but you don't understand mercy and grace. You just keep the law. It's not about law. So, they're so worried about violating the law that they literally would count, you know, crumbs of things and granules of things to make sure 10% went to the temple. So, because if you were a Levite, you know, you weren't allowed to have a part-time job at 7-Eleven. You could only do, like, Levite stuff. So everybody else had to provide for you. Which is good. On the other hand, you know, it made him more arrogant as time went on. Just everybody provided for him. He didn't have to worry about anything. Alright, so let's go into 15. Because 15 is important, a little bit later in history. Although these people aren't going to know that yet. If somebody start reading in 15, I'm going to try to summarize this. So every seventh year, now you see the significance of seven, every seventh day is the day of rest. Every Sabbath is the rest. No work. From sundown Friday to sundown Saturday, there's no work. So every seventh year, there's a little bit of a different kind of a rest in that you forget people's loans. You give back stuff that you borrowed. You give people, like, another chance. You give people, like, freedom. And this prefigures the cross. Because we owe a horrendous debt that you can't pay. But Jesus paid the debt. So you get another chance. The debt's gone. So like if you run up a big Visa bill at the seventh year, it's gone. You don't owe the money anymore. So it's like a freedom to get a new start. And every seventh year, the land has to rest. You're not allowed to plant anything the seventh year. And what he's saying here is, you have to have faith in the provision I'm going to give you. Just like you know the manna is coming, but every seventh year you can't plant any crops. So that means when you harvest the end of the sixth year, you're not going to harvest again basically for 2 years. But if you believe that, I'm going to take care of you. And you still have to help the poor while that's going on. Because while your land is resting, stuff's going to grow on it. Wild grapes, wild grain, you know, because there's always seeds and stuff. You're not allowed to harvest that. That's for the widows and the orphans. No Remember, they couldn't harvest the corners of the fields. They could only shake the tree once. They could only go through the vineyard once. And everything else is for the widows and the orphans. So God says, if you follow my rules, you won't have poverty, because everybody will be taken care of. Your debts will be forgiven. There'll be food. And if you're the landowner, and you see some poor widow with a couple of kids, you know, grunging around in your land, picking stuff, you can't run out there and say, hey, those are my grapes. You can't have those. Just like Babylon. It's kind of like a social welfare system built in. And it applies to foreigners, too. The Jews call it the Lord's release every seventh year. Now, they forgot to do this for a long time. And that's why when the Babylonians destroyed Jerusalem and destroyed the temple in 586 B.C., God says you're going to go into exile for 70 years because you're going to make up for every Sabbath that you didn't keep. So they make up for it by being in exile for 70 years. So every seventh year, and now in the nation of Israel, last year they didn't plant anything. Every seventh year they don't plant. They still export oranges and stuff. Stuff just to keep growing. And I don't know if they give it to the widows and orphans. But anyway, so now they're kind of very strict about it. So that's basically 15. There's a lot of laws about livestock, and that's not, you know, really important for us. But now, chapter 16 becomes very important to us because we're sort of still doing it, and the Jews are still doing it. Start reading at the beginning of 16. The Lord's going to decide where you do the sacrifice. You're not going to decide. It's going to be the place where he puts his name. Just really keep that in mind as we go through these last couple lessons. Right? There's going to be a place where the Lord puts his name. And ultimately, it's going to be the Temple Mount, which is the holiest place on earth, because that's where the Lord put his name. And when they get back to the land, the Passover is going to be in Jerusalem every year at the temple. Now, we understand that because it symbolizes the sacrifice of Jesus on the cross, as we know through the adventures of so many skaters. I can't even deal with one more piece of matzah. But because that prefigures the cross, it's so important that you give it total attention and you do it in a way that he's put his name on. You don't just, you know, do it someplace out in the field. You do it at the temple, at the holy place where he put his name. This is just something you have to do every year for all your generations. So the Passover is critical. Okay, go ahead. there's the Passover, and then there's 7 days where we don't eat bread. Leaven always stands for sin. Jesus says, you know, a little leaven spoils the whole loaf. Don't take the leaven of the Pharisees. Leaven always means sin. So it's a feast of unleavened bread, which ended, well, which the year Jesus died started on the Saturday. So when he went into the tomb, started the Feast of Unleavened Bread, interestingly enough, because Jesus is all about bread. Then the following day that year was the Feast of First Fruits, which was the resurrection. That wasn't like coincidental. Or Jesus didn't say, oh, I can't believe that. Wait a minute, I rose from the dead on a piece of first fruit? What a cool coincidence. Later, Paul's going to write, he's the first fruit of the resurrection, because he rises on the first fruit. But there's 1 week of not eating any leaven at all, so that you remember coming out of Egypt. Now, why is that important to us, being from out of Egypt? Right. They were physical slaves in Egypt, and they were set free. We were slaves to sin, and we've been set free. They went into the wilderness and wandered through the desert, ate basically unleavened bread for 40 years, which was the manna. And what bread do we eat that we remember Jesus? Yes. So the you know, this thing, I forgot how it goes. You know, the communion is, but anyway, but it's about remembrance. You know, Jesus said, do this in memory of me. Do this in remembrance of me. He didn't just say, oh, do it because you guys will like this, or this is going to be really cool if you guys do this, or it might add something interesting to your life if you do this. He says, no, you do this in remembrance of me. So when you eat that bread and drink the cup, you proclaim his death because you remember it. Right? The same thing. For a week, you only eat unleavened bread, then you'll remember how you got delivered from Egypt. We remember how we got delivered from sin. Because we're stupid. And we'll forget. I mean, we think we're smart, but we're really pretty stupid. That sorry bunch of guys Jesus hung out with would have never managed to know any of this unless the Holy Spirit enlightened their minds to it. And the same with us. You know, we say, oh, yeah, I know all that stuff. I learned it in catechism. But you know how many people think about that? Say, wow, I was delivered from sin by this. Wow. But no, we're more worried about what's on TV, what's our cholesterol, what kind of the game on. What kind of car should I buy? And it's nonsense how we live. We're supposed to be a special people. So this is pretty cool. You see the parallel. And as much as they have to, I mean, all the Jews in the world do unleavened bread. But, you know, it's over now. But we should do it more than anybody. I mean, we do it more than anybody, but we should be more excited about it than anybody because we have so much more. That was a type, that was a shadow of what was going to happen. The writer to the Hebrews says, those things are types and shadows. We have the substance. And how many people get excited about it? How long is this going to take? This guy doesn't shut up. We'll never be out of here by 9. Or whatever it is. to give pilgrims in the Holy Land light at night so there would be a full moon. So they disassociated it from Passover. The Eastern Church still keeps the original calendar. But the Western Church, you know, it's the first Sunday after the first full moon after the burning. Sometimes it lines up. Most of the time it doesn't. I don't know how they figure all that stuff out. Sometimes Easter and Passover are a month apart. Sometimes they're a few days apart. Sometimes they're right on. But the thing to keep in mind is that year, Passover was Good Friday. Feast of Unleavened Bread started Saturday and went on for the week. First fruits was that Sunday. The Orthodox Church keeps the old calendar. Yeah. Because they wanted to give pilgrims who went to the Holy Land light at night so the full moon would be out. Because you'll see, if you didn't notice it, you'll notice it from now on. Every Easter there's either a full moon or there just was a full moon. I doubt it. It's pretty hard to change things back. You know, it's not going to change, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years of doing something. Plus everybody would get all weirded out. Ultimately, I mean, does it really matter or not really? Like, if every day is not Good Friday for you, you don't get it. Good Friday just happens to be the real Good Friday, but every day is Good Friday, and every day is Easter. Well, we know Easter Sunday, and we know that Jesus made two appearances in the upper room on Sundays. If you listen to this coming week's radio show, or the following week's radio show, there's this pattern of the first day of the week is sanctified by Jesus doing something. So, I forgot where I was going with that. But anyway. But yeah, it's Saturday, it's Sabbath. And of course, you'd be no work. Oh no, I would be definitely out. You can't even make a meal on Saturday. You can't flip the light switch off. No, you're not allowed to make a fire. So when electricity came, they translated it into what you can't turn the electricity on. Mm-hmm. Everybody has. Sure. Sunday's the Christian Sabbath. There's a lot of, we can talk all night about that. Some people, 99% of Christianity agrees with that. Some don't, because it never was officially changed. Most people blame it on Constantine. Although if you read through the book of Acts, it says the apostles worshiped on the Sabbath and on the Lord's Day, which is the fifth day of the week. So they worshiped both Saturday and Sunday. And people believe those things, that's cool. Worship both days. Go to Jerusalem, good luck finding a place to eat on Saturday. Unless you go to an Arab market, you don't eat. I walk around there going, how about feeding the Gentiles? What am I supposed to do? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Well, by Christian tradition is that Sunday is the Lord's Day and was the new Sabbath because it was the day of the resurrection. It was the day that Jesus talked to the disciples, and it was Pentecost. That year was a Sunday as well. And then the apostles started doing some worship on the first day of the week, which they called the Lord's Day to commemorate the resurrection. So as the church became less Jewish and more Gentile, it kind of totally shifted to Sunday. Was in the first few decades, they worshiped both days. So we as, well, certainly as Catholic Christians, we worship on Sunday. I don't think we're going to get much support in the church to say, I think we should worship on Saturday. But anyway, I mean, that's a debate that's going on. I mean, you guys don't have to worry about it because you mostly don't talk to many Jewish believers, but they're rabid about it. They blame it all on Constantine. All the Antichrist popes that did this. They're like rabid about it. Well, Seventh-day Adventists too. But Jews who come to faith in Jesus all worship on Saturday. Pretty much. Except in Toledo. We go there a lot. We love this church in Toledo. But they worship Friday night and Sundays. But anyway. So the other thing that's happening there is, remember in Egypt, the Passover was in your house. Because that was the deliverance night. But now God says, when you get to the land, I'm going to tell you where it's going to be. It's going to be in the place where I put my name. It's going to change when you get to the land. It's going to be in a place. And it's still going to be blood. Because the blood is the important part. Right, you got it. If you don't have the blood of the lamb, then you're still under the curse. Now, since God ordained the temple as the Passover, at Jesus' time, the day Jesus was killed, there were 250,000 lambs slaughtered in Jerusalem. And that was the Passover. Now, since there's been no temple, there's been no lamb sacrifice, and so there's been no lamb dinners, so they don't eat lamb anymore on Passover. Plus, there's no blood atonement for their sin since 70 AD. That's a whole other problem. We don't have to worry about it because we have the ultimate blood atonement, which is the sacrifice once for all. You remember that one of the Hebrews. So, the seventh day of the week is the solemn feast. It's every week has a holy day, which is Saturday, in this case. Which is kind of neat. Every week is a holy day. It's God's day. It's not your day. You're allowed to enjoy it. You're supposed to enjoy it. You're not supposed to work. But as Jesus said, you know, the Sabbath was made for man, not man made for the Sabbath. It's for our benefit, too. Because you have a day where you rest. They thought they were stressed, and they didn't know. Their biggest stress was, you know, I didn't leave the barley patch over there. We're under stress constantly, night and day. So anyway, so the Sabbath gets, you know, as we went through Exodus, remember how many times, keep the Sabbath, keep the Sabbath, keep the Sabbath, so there it is again. Then he talks about, so you don't forget, Pentecost, Shavuot, the Feast of Weeks, reiterates that. Now, we don't have to get into all of this, but it's actually when the first barley appears on the plant. You offer that to the Lord. It's a harvest feast. And we know that Pentecost was when the Holy Spirit fell in the upper room. Because that started the harvest that we know, which is still going on. It's not coincidence. Because the church started on Pentecost. He's been harvesting souls ever since. So he says, you know, 7 weeks from the Feast of First Fruits, the 50th day is Pentecost. And we've been through all that. That's why it's called, we use the Greek word Pentecost, the Hebrew Shavuot, which means the weeks. It's the Feast of Weeks. So, you're supposed to make a lot of food and share it with the poor and the needy and the widows. And you always have to keep in mind that widows were pathetic in these days. Because women didn't just go someplace and get a job. So if their husband died, they had to live on the land. They had to glean, they had to look at the trees, they had to live on, you know, money somebody gave. So he says, he tells them in 16 that you always remember that you were slaves. All the time you remember that you were slaves. Remember, you tell the Passover story in the first person. You always remember that you were a slave and now you're free. Now, how does that apply to us? We always remember what we were like before Jesus. What a mess we were. How your life was a hopeless disaster. Even if you were a billionaire living in Beverly Hills, your life is a disaster without Jesus. So we know that and we remember that. So we remember being slaves. A different kind of slave. Right?
Right.
And then at the end of the last harvest is the Feast of Tabernacles or Sukkot. So we know that. It's a 7-day feast. We've been through all this. You have to put it up on the website. You really might see the notes. But they can be doing it. But remember, you live in a tent, you make all kinds of food, you have to invite poor people, and you party for 7 days. And then he goes on to say at the end of 16, somebody read there at verse 16 and 17. Out of the 7 feast days, you have to go to Jerusalem if you're a man. Women aren't obliged to it, but the women probably would have gone. Because let me tell you, if you lived in the Galilee, let's say, getting to Jerusalem was not a 2-hour drive. It was like 4 or 5 days of walking. Then you were there for the feast, and then it's 4 or 5 days of walking to go back. So, now you can drive it in a couple hours, but long walk. So these three out of the 7 feast days, Passover, Pentecost, Tabernacles, you have to be in Jerusalem. And you can't come empty-handed. You have to bring something. You have to bring something to offer. And although we all know about Jesus driving the money changers out of the temple and how terrible we think that is, and it was, the reason those guys were there is people came and they had to buy animals for sacrifice. If you came from, you know, the north of Galilee, you're not going to take lambs and stuff all the way to Jerusalem. It'd be crazy to be walking the week with your stupid lamb. So you bought the lamb when you were there. That's why those guys are selling stuff. Except they were doing it in the wrong place. First time we went to the Basilica of Guadalupe in Mexico City, I was so turned off I couldn't even stand it because there was a vendor every 5 feet selling souvenirs. Rosary shirts, tacos. You can't even imagine. They finally cleaned all that stuff out. And that was so much nicer there. I mean, there was no prayerful atmosphere. It was, hey, you want to buy a Guadalupe rosary? Hey, you over there. It's like, leave me alone. You know, I'm trying to be prayerful. But now when you walk the Stations of the Cross, you got that going too. Because people are selling you stuff as you go. I don't know how these guys on TV look so prayerful when they're doing it. It's a zoo. There's people hounding you. Hey, come here, I got something to show you. Hey, you want to buy this? Hey, come on, man, you can get a Via Dolorosa t-shirt. Come on, come over here. What's your favorite station? Come over here. That's about it. We have this Muslim guy, this Arab guy, but he was not a Christian, trying to sell us stuff. The first couple of, first two, three stations are inside the Muslim quarter. So there's little chapels. We'd go to a little chapel. God'd be waiting outside for us. We'd walk out. Hey, you know, let me tell you. Let me tell you. Come over here a minute. Go into the next chapel. God'd be waiting outside. And, you know, you're kind of scared to say, hey, get out of here. I'm going to kill you. Anyway. So it's anything but prayerful. It's really noisy and kind of nuts. So anyway. So chapter 17 is interesting because I should start reading at 17:1. Okay, time. Why is that? How does that apply to us? You never sacrifice an animal that has a blemish or some problem. Right. If Jesus is the innocent victim, spotless lamb, he's without sin. So the prefigurement of that is when you sacrifice an animal, it has to be spotless, no blemishes, no diseases. It has to be all the same color. Can't be sick. You can't pick some sickly little lamb and say, oh, we're not going to use that one anyway. Let's go sacrifice this one. It's an abomination. Because he was the perfect lamb. So you had to make a sacrifice. If you took like your best lamb, you had to kill it. But so if somebody's worshiped an idol, the moon, the sun, the stars, executed. Remember before this, God says, you don't look at the moon and say, oh, wow. You don't look at the stars and say, oh, wow. You can be amazed by that, but you don't worship it as something divine, because they're creations. And of course, primitive people like our ancestors were worshiping gods that were related to all those things. And the biggest temples in Europe were to the sun god. So he says, if somebody does that, they're to be executed because it contaminated the land. See, in Israel, you contaminated the whole land. And interestingly, you have to have two or three witnesses. Everything in the Old Testament is based on two or three witnesses. You can't do it on the testimony of one witness. So if somebody says, hey, I saw Joe over there worshiping the sun, you can't get executed for that. But if three guys go, oh yeah, every day he's worshiping the sun. And you're supposed to take him and kill him. Now, where else do you hear in our time, well, not our time, but in the New Testament, how does two or three come in? Yes, two or three are gathered. There's two or three witnesses, makes it true. Now, he's with you even if you're the only person in the room. But where two or three are gathered, then there I am. Everything's based on two or three. In another place, I can't remember the thing, he says, the testimony of my father and I were two witnesses. we count way more than all you guys put together, so shut up. Everybody thinks Jesus was so nice. He was pretty tough. He was that little sissy. Not in a sacrilegious way, but you know what I mean. He used very blunt language with people. Just if you have any doubts, read Matthew 23, you'll read W. Homer. You should be able to study just on that sometime. So that's the worst violation of the law of idolatry. That's the worst. You worship something that isn't God. Now, lest you think we don't do that, we do that more than they do. We worship every idol you can imagine. Our health, our money, our retirement plan, our house, our car, whatever it is, my job, whatever it is. It's anything that takes you away from God as an idol. Thank you for that. Now, Jesus isn't just something that supplements your life, you know, makes your life a little bit better, or adds something to it. If you think that, you're in big trouble. And, you know, we all do that. So, the witnesses that condemn the guy throw the first stones. Where do we hear that? John chapter 8. Okay, you guys all saw her commit adultery? Okay, you guys start throwing the stones. That's pretty neat. All these things, and it has to be done outside of the community, outside of the camp, because you take sin outside of the camp. You never leave sin in the camp. But they have the scapegoat. The sins got transferred to the goat, and the goat then got released out into the wilderness. You take the sin away from the community, symbolically, of course. There's always sin in the community, but that was symbolic of you taking the sin out of the community. This is why Jesus died outside the city. Because he's got everybody's sin on him outside the city. He can't die in the city. The time he died, it was outside the city. Now it's, or it's not. But the actual city wall was, I think, kind of a southern station or the night state, I can't remember. But the original city wall was at the Roman time, the Jesus time. Sin always is dealt with outside. You can't get bodies outside the city. You can't have dead bodies in the city. Everybody would be defiled. Somebody, you know, when they were standing in line at Wendy's and somebody fell over dead, everybody would run out of the building. If you touched a dead body, you couldn't go to the temple for the Sabbath. You couldn't make sacrifice. You were unclean. I mean, anything. If you had a sore on you that had pus coming out of it, you couldn't go to the temple. You were unclean. Childbirth, menstrual period, you couldn't go to the temple. So it was done and you got re-cleansed. I mean, you know, so these are all part of the 613 laws. And it's interesting for us to know that because with Jesus being presented at the temple the 40th day, as we've talked about many times, is that the law. Mary couldn't have gone to the temple before the 40th day. Then she could. After she did the Nicola bath. So all these things they would have done. You know, they don't walk around like this. They're like real people that live a real life. And when you understand their Jewish context, you understand kind of how they live. We don't know exactly, but you know, kind of how they live. Because, you know, it has kind of a rhythm of life. Every Friday night you light the candles. You eat the food you made the day before. Then Sunday, Saturday night at sundown. Oh boy, let's party. Then you can eat again. Then you can cook again, I should say. So then there's a system of courts. If people can't resolve a dispute, they go to the priests. And when the priests decide on a verdict or a decision, that's binding. This is why the Sanhedrin was involved in Jesus' death, because there's the court. Now, you're also not supposed to have a trial during the night, but have a trial in daylight. So they violated the law there, but they didn't care at that point. So the priests make the final decision. Now, here's something that you guys have already studied, 1 Samuel. Now, chapter 17, we'll go down to verse 14 and read that. Remember, they're a separate people. God is their king. When you get to the land, people are going to say, we want a king. He said this in 1 Samuel. God says, don't be like all the other people. Then they say, we want to be like everybody else. Yeah. Yes. If you go back to 1 Samuel, they refer back to this chapter of Deuteronomy. Samuel even tells them. And remember, he tells him, if you get a king, he's going to have horses, he's going to have women, he's going to take your crops, he's going to recruit your men into the army, he's going to run your life. Well, but we want to be just like everybody else. And again, we're doing that now. We want to be just like everybody else. We want to have divorce. We want to have all this stuff. Who cares about all those old laws? We want to get, like, with it now. We want to be like everybody else. Look around. See what's happening. And the churches aren't taking stands. You don't hear anybody speaking. So it just keeps going and going. So God says, when you do want a king, I'm going to choose him. Okay? So how did they violate that? They wanted Saul, who was from the wrong tribe, and not somebody God approved of. So finally, when they realized what a disaster it was, then God picked David to be the next king. So he gave in, then it turned into a disaster, and then he said, okay, since you want a king, I'm going to pick the king, and it's going to be David. But he tells them ahead of time, you're going to have a king, and the king's not supposed to multiply horses and gold and wives and stuff. David does it. Solomon doesn't. All the ones after them. Solomon has so many women that he can't even remember who he's married to. He has 300 wives and 700 mistresses. Right. Whenever he passed a woman in the courtyard, he said, now, did you get married last year? Yeah, that's a disaster. It's like a 300 anniversaries. We all probably have to wear a number. Wait a minute, which one are you? Oh, yeah. So. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I know. It couldn't be. You couldn't possibly keep track of it. But you know, keep in mind, for us, that's, you know, that kind of stuff is alien. But when you're the king, you have power. And you say, oh, I like that woman over there. Go get her. Somebody goes and gets her. You don't say, hey, wait a minute. But, I mean, you know, 1,000 women is a little excessive. Yeah, it's like half the women in town. Yeah, go on. Anyway, so now look at, start reading at 18. Because God tries to put a check on what's going to happen. Good. 18. No, no, verse 18.
When he is enthroned in his kingdom, he shall have a copy of this law made from his wall that is in custody until the day of his death. He shall keep it in his memory all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God, and to do and fulfill all the words of this law and his statutes. Let him not become estranged from his countrymen and his tribe, nor turn aside to the right or to the left.
So the king has to keep a book of the law with him at all times. He has to read it all day long to remember what he's supposed to do. That's the check. And of course, none of them did it. It got so bad later that they forget like the holy days. It was a disaster. If you never have the patience to read through the book of 1st and 2nd Kings, 1st and 2nd Chronicles, you get a real workout about that. Every king was evil. Once in a while somebody was good. Every other king was evil. But they're supposed to have a book of the law with them so that you read this and you know how you're supposed to behave. And that you're not supposed to be lifted up above your brethren. Now, how does that apply to, what does that prefigure? What do you think? How does that talk about Jesus? Yes, exactly. Exactly. He's the king, but he's not above his brethren. He's a doulos, a bondservant. That's right. You know, if you read Philippians chapter 2, it talks about that. You know, he was God, but then he takes the place of a bondservant. Yeah, yeah. But in 2 Corinthians, Paul talks about how he was the everlasting God, but he didn't hold on to that. Because when he became a doulos, which is a bondservant, a slave, in order to do what he had to do. And again, this is why there's no scorecards and points. Because salvation comes from that. Doesn't matter what you do. He became a servant and died for you, so you have nothing to add to the conversation. It's like at the final judgment, you know, you're going to be quiet because you have nothing to add. Because your whole life passes by. You don't say, oh, wait a minute, I can explain that. That happened on a really bad day. This guy got me really aggravated. So they keep the book by the law, by the throne. So chapter 18, it talks about the priests. Now this is, you know, the Levites have no physical land. They have no physical inheritance. They don't have anything. They're not supposed to have, like, their private money and wealth and stuff. They're supposed to be supported by the people. Which makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Exactly. Yes. Exactly. So, it's a, you know, some of the, you know, we don't get into all the details of it, but They get the food. They get all the stuff they need because the Lord has chosen them to minister in his name. He's not chosen you to do it. You support the one that's been chosen. Now, in our case, you know, we're not tribes and stuff, but here it's very clear cut. The Levites are supported. It's the smallest tribe, but it's the priestly tribe. If you're from the tribe of Benjamin, and you go to the temple and say, you know, I've always wanted to be a priest. They say, who's your father? Who is his father? Who is his how old you are, or how dedicated you are. And a Levite could be a creep. I mean, Caiaphas was a Levite. A Levite could be a creep, but he's still a Levite. Aaron was a creep. He's still a Levite. And he made the golden calf. Yes. Pretty much. Yes. Right. That's why we see there's like this confusion with Mary and Elizabeth. And Mary's from the tribe of Judah. You know, she's descended from David. But her cousin Elizabeth is married to Zechariah, who's a priest, so he's a Levite. So Elizabeth, maybe, is from Judah, married a Levite, or maybe you're a Levite who's from other, some other way, I don't know. Or maybe they were distantly related. But little John the Baptist was a Levite. So, then let's go down to verse 9. This was good stuff. Start reading at 9. 18, 9.
Mm-hmm. When you come into the land which the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not learn to imitate the abomination of the people there. Let them not be found among you anyone who immolates his son or daughter in the fire, nor a fortune teller, soothsayer, farmer, diviner, or caster of spells. No one who consults a ghostly spirit or keeps oracles from the dead. Anyone who does such things is an abomination to the Lord, and because of such abominations, the Lord your God is driving the nations out of your land. You, however, must be altogether sincere toward the Lord your God. Though these nations whom you are to dispossess, or simply should say it in fortune colors, the Lord your God will not permit you to do so.
Okay, good. So pause there. So all these things you hear about, I mean, these are fortune tellers, astrologers, witches, you know, mediums, necromancers, you know, they're going to contact Uncle Bill, who died. That's an abomination to the Lord. They may contact somebody that's not Uncle Bill, because these are things that invite demons into your midst. Right? You don't do that. It's an abomination. And I'm going to drive them out of the land so you're not influenced by them. So you don't get up in the morning and, you know, I wonder what my horoscope is for today. Or I'm going to go see that woman over there because she's a fortune teller. She's going to tell me what I should be doing the rest of this week. That's an abomination. And why is it an abomination? Because God is the authority over your life. Not the stars, not some medium, not some whatever a soothsayer is. I guess a fortune teller. Right? Exactly. And as the culture is degenerated, there's more and more of that. We live in a totally degenerate culture now. That is degenerate. You got to really think about where you live. It's degenerate. And passing babies through the fire, you know what this is? This is abortion. You sacrifice babies to make your life better. Abomination. Ouija boards. Right. Well, because he's interpreting a dream that God gives to somebody for a specific reason. Now, if you went to him and said, you know, I had this dream last night about, and he said, oh, that means that next week you're going to get rich. No, but he's doing it in a very specific way that he's been instructed to. So all that stuff's out. People like to contact the dead, you know. The problem is when you're dead, you're not there. Paul says that you're absent from the body, it doesn't work the Lord. Or the other way. Or when, you know, the writer to the Hebrews says, after death then comes the judgment. So, you know, you're not going to die, God's going to judge you, and you're going to still be, you know, at your house, or down the street haunting little kids, or, you know, whatever. And you're not going to get some woman to come in wearing weird stuff and say, we're going to talk to Uncle Bill. And all of a sudden, something happens. You go, oh, that's Uncle Bill. Well, something may be there, but it's not Uncle Bill. Uncle Bill can't do that. And people really get into that. People want to know the future, want to know what happened to Uncle Bill, so they, you know, they do that. Scripture to me is that on the last day there are going to be people that come and say, well, it's good because all these things are going to happen. And they're going to be outside wailing and gnashing their teeth while they see Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and all the people say, and have them to suffer all that. This is the very parallel scripture, right? And the people come to church every Sunday. Well, I didn't know. I didn't know who you are. Verse 15, now here comes a really cool thing. We have to do this. Now, start reading in 15. You read it. 18:15.
A prophet like me will the Lord, your God, raise up for you from among them from them to hand you fellowship.
So somebody's going to come up from their own people who's going to be like Moses. Go ahead.
This will be exactly what you requested of the Lord your God at Horeb on the day of the assembly. And he said, let us not again hear the voice of the Lord our God, nor speak to the fire and lest we die. And the Lord said to me, this is well said. I will raise up for them a prophet like you when I'm on your kingdom, and will put my words into his mouth.
Pause for a second. So people are going to say, look, we can't deal with the glory of God being shown. We don't want to know that anymore. We just want somebody that we can understand to talk to us. So he says, God says, you're right in saying that. So I'm going to raise up somebody from among you. Go ahead. And I'm going to put my words in his mouth.
He shall tell them all that I command him. If any man will not listen to my words, which is to my name, I myself will make him answer. But if the prophet presumes to speak in my name, an oracle that I have not commanded him to speak, or speak in the name of other gods, you shall die. If you say to yourself, how can we recognize an oracle which the Lord has spoken? Know that even though a prophet speaks in the name of the Lord, if his oracle is not fulfilled or verified, it is an oracle that the Lord did not speak. The prophet has spoken it to some of his days, and you shall have no fear of him.
Yeah. So a couple of things here. That might be, I don't know, that might be a little hard to follow. Somebody's going to be raised up who's going to explain to people about God. God's going to put his words in his mouth, and you have to listen to him. And he's going to be just like you. Remember, Moses is the mediator of the old covenant. This person is going to be like Moses. This is Jesus he's talking about. My words are going to be in him. He's going to be like you. He's related to you. But my words are going to be in him. And he's going to come from among your people. He's going to say everything I command. And if someone doesn't give heed to what he's saying, they get punished. Somebody says, you know, Jesus was a good teacher, a good philosopher. I really like him, but it's okay. There's a lot of philosophers. You get punished. Because everything you do, everything of your eternal destiny depends what you think about him. Depends on what you think of that. If he was a good teacher, then there was lots of good teachers. He was a great teacher. Really smart. Not educated, but really smart. There's lots of good teachers. Lots of good teachers today. John Paul II was an awesome teacher. But if you disagree with something that he said, you're not going to necessarily be damned because of that. This guy, this person, everybody's going to listen to. Well, they're included in this too. Remember when we were reading stuff about David? It's like sometimes it's David talking, and then sometimes it's Jesus talking, and it flips back to David. That's what's going on here. He's talking about there's going to be a line of prophets coming, and you're going to listen to them. But then the prophet is going to be the guy you have to listen to. This is why when people said, when Jesus said, you know, who do people say that I am? You know, some people say you're John the Baptist, or you're... Some people say you're the prophet. Those are what they're talking about. Whenever they talk about the prophet, it's somebody without a name, who's like Moses, comes from the people, and becomes a mediator. Right? There's two covenants. Moses is the mediator of the first one. Jesus, of course, is the mediator of the second one. First one sealed in blood of animals. Second one sealed in blood, his blood. So he's going to be like you. So this is like awesome prefigurement. That's why when people say the Old Testament is boring, they just can't even stand it. He's going to come from your people. He's not going to come from some foreign place. You know, it's not going to be some Chinese guy who shows up and he's going to be the Messiah. He's going to come from your people. He's going to be just like you. And this is going to be like, God is going to speak to him, and he's going to speak. And he says, I only say what my I hear my father say. Jesus is God, right? Second person of the Trinity, right? So interestingly, when Jesus was physically on earth, he also was God. He also was present everywhere else, but he was, you know, the God-man, but we can't understand, we cannot understand that. Right? Anybody says they understand that, you know right away that they don't. Nobody can understand that. So, as second person of the Trinity, Jesus of Nazareth could have said, you know, while we've been chatting here at Starbucks, I just decided to make this new star that's in this other galaxy. I hope you guys like it. No. He's not there for that. He's there just for his purpose. He could have done that. I don't know if he did or not. And of course, all those guys would have looked at him and said, what? Maybe they thought he needed some medication. He could have done something like that. He could have done it. But he says, I only say what I hear my father say. God, in terms of the Godhead, says, I'm going to talk to him. And so at Sinai, people were terrified for this. I mean, you remember when God tells Moses, you can't see my glory and live. But we can't deal with that because we're not wired like that. But when you see the God-man, who looks just like everybody else, you can deal with that better. Makes sense. Yes. Killed them all, but they revered them. Every single one of them they killed, pretty much. This is why in Matthew 23, Jesus says, you guys say, if you were there, you wouldn't have killed the prophets, but you would have. And so would we have. You know, people don't want to hear truth. You know, why do you think everything in this culture is tolerated except Jesus? The only thing that's not tolerated. Because people can't stand that. When we talk about Buddha, everybody goes, oh, yeah. We talk about Jesus, people go, we can't have that. Because it's condemning. It's, you know, they know there's something about it. But the important thing is people wanted a mediator. Moses was a mediator. We talked about all this. We can't deal with God, so we need a go-between. Well, so Jesus is the go-between. As he tells us this, Paul writes to Timothy, there's one mediator between God and man, the man Christ Jesus. There's no other mediator. He's at the right hand, always interceding. So when God, in the sense of a father, says, you know, Joe there, I can't even look at him now because of what he just did. Jesus says, yeah, but I died for him. He repented and he's a believer now. So, okay. Forgets the sin. God forgets the sin. So, it's a mediator. So, this is the thing. And on the other note, the more minor part of that is God says, my word go to the prophets. That's why the true prophets said, thus says the Lord, thus saith the Lord in the old King James, thus saith the Lord, because it's the Holy Spirit talking through them. Did you hear any of those radio shows about Ezekiel? Because, you know, the Holy Spirit at that time falls on, you know, there's limited outpouring of the Spirit. It's not like now where the Spirit pours out on everybody. And it's like, you know, the Spirit would fall on one person who would then say something. course, the people didn't want to hear it, and they would kill him. And when it gets to the prophet, the same thing happens. We can't hear this, we're going to kill him. Every time. So that's the important thing. Chapter 19 is about cities of refuge. That's prefigured on the side, too. But mainly it was for if you committed manslaughter, you'd go to a city of refuge so the victim's relatives wouldn't come and kill you. You were safe there. It was not for murderers. If you committed willful murder, you were going to be executed. But if you accidentally killed somebody, say in a fight or whatever, you could go to a city of refuge and the victim's family couldn't come after you there. That's what chapter 19 is about. You can read that for your homework too. But the whole thing, the important thing here is the prophet. You've got to get that. Or else you think Jesus was just nice. So sick of hearing that, I guess. Jesus was nice to everyone. Yes, of course. But he didn't come to be nice. He came to die for you. There's nothing more nice than that. And people always say, well, he accepted everybody. Yes, but what did he tell the woman caught in adultery? Don't do it anymore. He accepted everybody, but didn't leave him